Welcome to the Create the Future with Rick Williams podcast, conversations with leaders who made difficult decisions and built lasting legacies. I am Rick Williams. I speak and write about how leaders can be more successful. My best-selling book, Create the Future, is your essential guidebook for making difficult decisions. This podcast is an opportunity for me and for you to hear how leaders with a wide variety of backgrounds have managed the challenges they faced, made difficult decisions, and had courage when going forward is tough. You will learn important lessons from other leaders. You will find that engaging with our 30-minute conversation will be a great investment of your valuable time. So let's get started. Welcome to the Create the Future podcast. I'm Rick Williams. The Create the Future podcast is a forum for leaders to share their stories about difficult decisions they made for their company or any organization, and in some cases for themselves. My goal is to share these stories about leadership and making tough calls with a broader leadership community so you will become a more successful leader of your organization. So we're fortunate to have a great guest today with a compelling story to tell. You will hear about lessons learned and what they experienced. I'm excited to introduce you to Jim Carlo. Jim is a leadership identity architect in Dallas, Texas, and I think we'll learn more about what in the heck that actually means. Jim has had a long experience in sales leadership in the medtech healthcare area. And Jim is also an award-winning author and keynote speaker. Now, we're not going to talk about sales and sales leadership today. We're talking about leadership and making tough decisions. So, Jim, welcome to the Create the Future podcast. Introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your journey to this point.
Rick, first, I want to thank you for allowing me to come on to your broadcast. I'm really excited to be here. So,
this is great. I'm glad you're here. I think it's going to be a great conversation. I know everyone's going to learn a lot from your experience now that I know a little bit about you and what you've gone through.
I have led a very interesting and happy life. And I destroy the myth that leaders are born that way because they're not. If that was the case, I wouldn't have held a C-suite position because my dad was a carpenter, his dad was a mason, and my great-grandfather was a chicken farmer. There's no C-suite in any of that stuff.
Right.
So, you know, that myth that everybody talks about is debunked. It's garbage. We need to throw it out. Because the reality is you develop your leadership skills over time by intentionally focus on growing them. And I'm the perfect example of that. And so when people talk about me being the identity architect of leadership, it's only because we have a habit of when a manager position opens, somebody reaches into the organization and pulls out one of the individual contributors who's a great producer of whatever and most knowledgeable, and we anoint them to be a manager. Mm-hmm. And they go home and they tell their spouse, I got promoted today. I got a pay raise. I'm now going to manage the team I work on. And your spouse says to you, you've never managed anybody. What are you going to do? And the reality is corporations today don't give you a roadmap of what to follow. And unfortunately, that leads to a lot of problems. 18 months down the road, that leader's frustrated because they can't transition from manager to leadership. Their team gets frustrated. Voluntary attrition goes through the roof, and the cost to replace people is astronomical, and nobody's talking about it. So mm-hmm. I changed the leadership identity by instilling in leaders six core principles that I have learned and honed over my career that has made me successful. When we look at companies in the United States today, voluntary attrition ranges between 10 and 15% on average. in some cases higher, my historical attrition rate is below 5%. I build long-term, successful, high-producing teams with the same framework we're going to talk about today. And you don't get that at management school. MBA, there's Harvard, Yale, they don't teach any of this stuff that we're going to talk about. And it's important because it doesn't just impact business people. And I've learned this from being invited to on podcasts that I never thought I would be on. These same principles work for executive chefs. They work for principals of schools. They work for superintendents of schools. And basically, anyone can use their can guide their life by these principles. So anyway, I'm happy to be here today. And where would you like to start?
Okay, well, this is great. What you're saying resonates so much with me that the old principle of promote to your level of incompetence is so true that often companies will pick the best sales manager at the best sales person and say, we're going to make you a sales manager, and then that person fails in that job. So I think you're 100% on target with assessing the problem and what needs to be done about it. Now, I know you want to talk about a particularly difficult and challenging position you were in, where you had to make a tough decision about your organization going forward. So why don't you give us a little bit of an introduction to that and tell us what happened?
So it was early 2002. I worked for a technology company that made claim processing systems for the health insurance industry. I had a team of 25 people that were su was supporting an old green screen technology. And we had 36 customers on this platform. And I had to tell this team that their jobs were going away, but that they needed to not quit because I needed them to support the 36 customers until we converted them. And I didn't know what to tell them. And I called a couple of people who I, my mentors, and I said, "What do I do?" And they said, "Good luck."
Okay.
And that was their advice. And so I struggled with this, and I said, you know, what would I want my boss to tell me if it was the same situation about my job going away? So my sole goal was to have nobody leave the company before it was their time to depart. We knew that the new claim systems would take 8 to 12 months to implement. So the first promise I made to them when I met with them is I would let them know as early as possible the potential date when their position would go away. At minimum, they had 8 months to find another job. Maximum could be 12, could be whatever. So first promise I made to them is I would give you as much notice as feasibly possible based on when clients would transition to the new product, or if clients just went to a different company to get the services that we were offering. The second promise I made to them was that anyone on the team that wanted to stay with the company and learn the new technologies and then transfer over to that area when it was their time to depart their position, I would make that pathway happen. And I would provide the training during the workday, not during the evening, not at lunchtime, not taking away from their personal time, so that when that time came, they were fully skilled to be able to handle that work. And then I made them a third promise.
Okay.
The third promise was, if you decide you don't want to stay here, I will help you find a job on the outside of the organization that meets the financial situation that you're in today and a job that you can perform at, and I will help you in that process. My sole goal was to make sure that nobody quit before it was time, or we'd have customers we couldn't support.
Yeah. So this was your offer to people if they would stay on and stick with the clients you had, is that right?
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
And knowing that they would go away. Here's what happened.
Well, wait, hang on. Before you get into what happened, I actually want you to back up for 1 second, because I want to hear about your personal experience. So your boss came to you and said, "Okay, Jim, we got to terminate this whole group." Talk about your experience. Your boss has now said to you, "I don't." Well, tell us what he said to you, and then what was your experience, your emotions, were you afraid or excited, or was this, how did all of that work for you personally?
So my boss came to me, and actually was in a management meeting, a leadership meeting, and we were planning the future and the rollout of these new products. And the conversation began with, as we do this, we're going to have to let people go. And Jim, you run the department that we're going to be letting go. Now, I had other departments in addition to this. This was just one component of it. And I sat there and I was like, great, thank you.
You
what
made
up?
my day.
You made my
Right.
day. I've got to figure out how to tell 20 some people that their jobs are going away. And I really struggled with what I was going to tell them and what commitments I felt safe at telling them and being transparent. And it was very difficult. I wrestled with it for 4 or 5 days and, kicked. Came home and I talked to my wife and I'm like, I don't know what the hell to tell these people. And talked to my boss a couple of times and then ultimately, because he didn't have a good storyline for me to tell either, and neither did my mentors. They said good luck. And so I really wrestled psychologically, stress to the max, because I wanted it to go over so people knew that I had their back. That's really what I wanted them to know. I've got your back. And the reality is, it worked. Nobody quit before it was time for them to depart. 90% of the people stayed with the company, and only a couple of them chose to leave the company. So the clients were completely supported for a 3-year period as we transitioned. In the middle of it, though, I get a phone call from HR. Never like phone calls from HR. They're
Right.
never good, right? And this
Right.
nice lady in HR said she wanted to come down and visit with me. And I said, okay, come on down. So she came down to my office, and my boss wasn't with her, so I knew I wasn't being escorted out. And she sat down and we started talking, and she said, I have to ask you a question. Because it's really bothering us. We've been going over the results of the employee satisfaction survey we did 2 months ago. And we don't understand the results in your area. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, I want to talk about your team in California. And I went, oh, how bad is it? Because that's the team we're reducing. And
Right.
she said, that's the funny thing. We have over 20,000 employees in this company, and that's the happiest team across the board. And you're downsizing them. How can they be so happy to lose their job? And I said, and I had to sit back and I was like, I don't know. But when we talked about it, I realized I took all the worry away from them. I committed to them to give them training. I committed to them to personally help them internally or externally to find their next job. They could go home that day and say to their wife, I'm losing my job. I don't know when, but I'll have at least 8 months' notice, and my boss is going to help me find a new job. They didn't have to worry. HR took from that and said, we're going to use this as a textbook case moving forward of the right way to downsize an organization. Be transparent, give them the roadmap, and help them, because it costs more to replace a person than it does to keep someone who already knows the culture, already knows the products and
Right.
services, and all of that. And that's the one thing most companies don't talk about, is the cost of replacing in voluntary resignations. And
Right.
it's significant. And so, a study last year came out, or the year before, from the Society of Human Resource Management. And it said for every departing employee, it's going to cost you between 100% and 300% of what that employee made to replace them, between no productivity during that time frame, recruiting, hiring, onboarding, training, and then getting that person up to speed is an 8-month process on
Yeah.
average.
Okay. So I what I want you to help listeners with is understanding the process that you went through to decide what you were going to do, the offer you were going to make, and it sounded to me like, however you ended up, however you did this, you had a very successful process with your with this team in California. You outlined the 3-point offer you were making to them. Go back. I asked you about how you felt when your boss said, "Oh, by the way, yeah, you're going to have to do a significant staff reduction in your department." How you reacted to that. How did you come up with these 3 steps that you three components of your offer? I mean, what was the process you went through to say, gee, what can I do here? Did you work with other people on your team? Or, I mean, I want people to say, okay, now that I understand. Now that I've heard his story, Jim's story about how he went through this, I can now relate that to my situation. So talk about what did you actually do to figure out what you're going to offer them, for instance?
So I think I have to take you back to the beginning of the story.
Absolutely.
And in 1983, I graduated college. The same year I graduated college, I ran for local political office as a city councilman, and I was elected. And I served 2 terms. Shortly after the election in November of 1983, I got a call from the city manager, and he asked me if I would come in and spend a few minutes with him. So I went in and I sat down with him, and we chit-chatted about the election, and he told me how successful I would be, and that he would be there to support me and all of this other stuff. And then he said to me something very profound. And he said, "Jim," he said, "I'm going to ask you to do me a favor." And the first thing I thought of is, I'm not even sworn in and somebody wants a political favor. What the hell? What did I get myself into? It wasn't that at all. He said something that changed my life. He said to me, he said, "Jim, every night when you go to bed, I want you to do one thing before you go to sleep. I want you to close your eyes and ask yourself the following question. Did I do anything today for my own personal self-benefit that was at the expense of another individual, group of individuals, or organization?" And he said, "If you answer yes to that question, you immediately have to think about how to unwind it and how to never do it again." And he said, "If you answer no to that question, you can rest, you can sleep peacefully." I have asked myself that question every night since 1983, and that level of integrity and transparency has guided my life. With that as a backdrop, my teams trust me. That's why my attrition, voluntary attrition rate historically is below 5%. They know I'm transparent, they know I have their back, they believe in me. And they know that they can come to me with a problem and I'm going to help them. And so my first pillar, and it's non-negotiable with any team I manage, is integrity and transparency. So that as a backdrop, I had to think about how do I stay true to my integrity values and work with these people knowing that their jobs are going away. So I told them the truth. They're going away, but you don't need to leave today because here's what I'm going to do to help you.
Let's stop right there for a second, though. How did you come up with the three elements of your offer? Is that something that you took a walk and said, gee, what would I, if I was in their shoes, what would I do? Or did you bring together a couple of key members of your team and say, let's talk about this? How did you come up with those three points?
I really sat down. I kept coming back to what would I want my boss to tell me if my
Okay.
job was going away? I'd want my
Okay.
boss to support me. I'd want my boss to not just say, your job ends today, have a good night. You know, pack your take your belongings and security
Okay.
will escort you out. And I really just focused on what is the right thing to do to help these people transition in this process. And I kept coming up with all kinds of things, including making phone calls to recruiters on their behalf. And I thought, no, I just need to have their back. And it was just going through that process of thinking, what are the things that are most important? Well, they can't just that the programming language between the green screen technology and Windows is very different. So the engineers would have to learn new programming languages. So where do I find that? Where do I get that? And, you know, make sure that I could pull this all off and help them. And it was a lot of soul searching, and it was a lot of, you know, do I
Did
not
you
tell
do
them? Do
this
I tell them?
while you're laying in bed trying to go to sleep and to think about this, or did you sit in a conference room and write stuff on a whiteboard or at the gym, or kind
Well,
of
at
how
the
did
time, it
you?
was
What I'm
more
hearing you say though
legal.
is you didn't pull together two or three of your key staff members and said, let's talk about this. I don't hear that you did not do that. This is more something you were trying to figure out on your own. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay. I
Absolutely
mean,
correct.
for instance, I will just share with you that I have found, and I'll admit this has been later in life found, I have found that some of my most creative time is actually laying in bed a little bit longer in the morning with the not the radio on, the TV on or whatever, and just free associating and what am I going to accomplish today? Or what am I not thinking? I mean, just that period of just doing nothing except free associated. And I literally, this is after I wake up before I get out of bed. Now, I don't know if I should be sharing stuff like that, but in truth, I have found that that is one of my most creative times. And, everybody is different. I mean, I know people that say I go to the gym and I get on the elliptical or the treadmill or whatever it is, and I that's when I start thinking about things. I mean, I think sharing your story, my story, helps other people think about, well, what can I do to give myself permission to think outside of the normal boundaries that I'm ordinarily constrained by.
Yeah, and a lot of the thought was at night, as I laid there in bed, asking myself, what am I going to do to help these people and be true to the fact that I'm not doing it for a self-serving benefit? And one could say that what I did was for a self-serving benefit, but it really was for a corporate benefit that we couldn't leave the clients uncovered, right,
Right.
and not supported. And at the same time, my personal goal was to make everyone on that team get them into a spot emotionally where they felt psychologically safe that nothing was going to happen before the set time frame and be able to give them a course of action and have their back. And so, in essence, I took all the stress off of them and put it on me. But I felt that I owed them that because I, as a leader, they're my responsibility. And they believed in me and they believed in the company and they performed. And to this day, I periodically, there's two people on that team that every boss's day, I get an email to this day from them thanking me for what I did and I was the best boss they ever had or whatever. But, and ironically, a lot of people who have worked with me throughout my career who have gone on to other things will reach out when they're ready to transition to a new role and they call me and ask me if I have anything open because they want to come back and work with me. And I really think that's a testament to that transparency and integrity that people aren't getting. When I interview people today, I hear people talk about the situations that they're in, and I sense that they feel unsafe psychologically with that leader or that organization. And many of the reasons why people leave a company have nothing to do with the company, but really have to do with the leader they report to.
Yep, that's true. Absolutely.
And that's the leader I want to change the identity of because they can't make that transition from individual contributor or even manager to leader. There's an identity gap there. And so I can fix the identity gap. And for companies, if there's anybody who's in HR listening to this or CEOs, if you have an attrition problem, instilling my framework, I can cut your attrition rate in half, if not more. Because I have people who I've mentored for 25 years who follow my principles, and they have the same success rate.
So let me ask you, I want to keep us on to your experience as a leader. Now, when your boss said, "Oh, by the way, most of this department is going to go away," was that putting your job in ri at risk, or what was your personal situation?
Actually, not at all, because I had five different departments that were reporting to me at the time. And my leader was somebody I had great respect for. In fact, the company I worked for at the time was Perot Systems, and it was started by Ross Perot. And his leadership mindset permeated throughout the organization. In fact, he wrote a book on leadership that every employee is given on their first day on the job. And that set the standard for how people led. And he always said, our most important asset is our people, and we will always take care of them.
Yeah, he was. I'm not remembering now the details, but during the he was instrumental in bringing some of his people out of Iran after the revolution, and it's an amazing story of commitment to saving people from his company who were trapped in Iran after the revolution.
Correct. He went further than that. And now
Yeah,
that
go
was a
ahead.
great accomplishment because he did it and the country wasn't doing it for him fast enough, and they were his employees. But that focus on that was in our culture. And I'll tell you a story. Whenever you had an employee whose spouse or their child was in the hospital with a serious medical condition, we had to report it to his office. And we had to tell his office what we were doing to ensure that they were getting the best care possible. And if not, his office staff would find where the best care for that situation was in the country. I had
Well,
an
that's cool.
employee on that team from California who was 28 years old and needed to have a heart valve replaced. I reported it to Mr. Perot's office. They suggested we fly the family at our expense to Dallas to have the surgery in Dallas, which is famous for heart surgeries, and put the family up for the 2 weeks he would be in the hospital, and then fly them back home, all at our expense. And I mean, this is the extent he would go to. So I went to the family and I made that offer, and they declined the offer because the family was close enough to the hospital in San Francisco that they were going to use, and they didn't want to just get up and displace themselves into Dallas for a couple of weeks. And I accepted that. However, I still had a responsibility to that family. So I called the hospital and I said, I have a young man coming in next week for open heart surgery. I know we can't talk about the medical conditions, but I have to feed his family 3 times a day because they're going to be camped out at that hospital. So 3 times a day, I need to figure out how to feed them. So I talked to the dietary department. They said, we can't help you. I talked to the cafeteria manager. They said, we can't help you. So I called the CEO of the hospital. This is a true story. And he calls me back. He said, how can I help you? And I said, well, I said, I have a problem. I have a pa you have a patient coming in, and he's got a fairly large family that's going to be camped out. He's 28 years old, having open heart surgery. There's going to be people at your hospital in the waiting rooms for the next 14 days. I have to feed them 3 times a day. How can you help me make it happen? He said, oh, we can't do that. And I said, look, we're going to pay for it. It's not a, I just need access to food. He said, we can't do that. I said, then if you can't do that, I still have a responsibility to take care of that family. So there will be caterers coming 3 times a day to bring food to that family on the floor in the waiting room on the floor that wherever that patient is. And he says, you can't do that. I said, you don't understand. I don't have an option. I have to do that. And so he calls me back 2 days later. He says, we figured it out. You don't need to call the caterers. We figured it out. And he told me how they would do it and all, everything. And so everything went well. The family was fed. Surgery was successful. Kid gets that discharged, comes back to work a few weeks later. And about 3 months later, I realized I never got a bill. So I called the CEO, had to leave a message. He called me back and he said, Mr. Carlo, he said, I'm not sending you a bill. And I said, but I owe you money and I promised to pay you for the food. He said, I know, but you taught me a very valuable lesson about leadership and about taking care of your employees. And to this day, I talk about the extent to which you went through to take care of that family. And I realized that that's a deficit in my leadership style. And so I passed that on to him, and in exchange, we didn't get a bill, which was fine. But the reality was, here was a CEO of a hospital with, I'm sure, over 1,000 employees, because it was a university hospital. And he realized that he had a gap in his leadership style, and there's a different way to do that, and to take care of people, and to keep, and I think that's why people really at that company stayed at that company, because they knew the company would always take care of them.
Well, let me we need to wrap up here in a few minutes, but let me go back to sort of the beginning of this again, because again, I'm focusing on you as the leader making really tough decisions both for yourself and for your company. You have described really wonderfully how you thought about took time maybe at laying in bed at night, thinking about, okay, if I was in my if I was in my employee's position, what would I be afraid of, and what would I hope my boss could do for me? Go back and think about your own what you were going through personally. I'm as I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking about, gee, what could go wrong here? I know I have to make a decision, and I am going to make a decision. I'm going to tell the staff something. It might work, it might not work. How do you think about evaluating the risks of whether the proposal you're going to make would work or not work? How do you bring yourself to the point of saying, okay, I now have a plan. I've got to go ahead with it. How do you go? What is the process you went through to A, think about, do I want to do something that's just perfunctory, high risk? I hear you taking that responsibility. That's great. I know it took a while to get to that point. Talk about how you brought yourself to the point of actually doing this from that perspective of what if this doesn't work? What are you afraid as the leader of making this decision? Talk about that process for yourself a little bit.
I was very afraid of making that decision
Okay.
because the downside would be it would come to be, I would have a deficit of having to satisfy 36 customers with people I don't have. And I had to find a balance between hitting the company objectives and hitting employee expectations. And I had to weigh them both. And I tried to find the balance of what would make sense. So in this department, we had software engineers, we had help desk people, we had account management people. We didn't have any salespeople. They were in a different organization. But the reality is I had to be able to convey to them that they were safe and that, they would know everything I knew about the schedule, the timing, or the whatever. And Bob would know, I'm just making up names here. Bob would know that he's 14, number 14 on the list, which may be the wave that happens in 18 months. And so they all had the plan and we marched with that. But the process I went through, I will tell you, was emotionally stressful.
How did you deal with your own fears as you went through this?
I kept coming back to what is the right thing to do and what is the right thing to do to protect the employees that I have, to make them feel comfortable that this would work so that they didn't run out the door. And how did I make sure that I conveyed to the company that we would be able to maintain the customers for that length of time as we started to transition them? And I kept coming back to that balance of how do I do both? And the only thing I could, it came back to being that integrity model of being upfront and honest, not hiding anything, and not surprising people with, oh, by the way, today's your last day, but by letting them know that my door was open, my phone was always available. And if they had questions, they would get the straight answer from me, like they would always get normally anyway. And I don't sugarcoat things. And so, telling them when I had that conversation with them, I mean, I said to them, I know emotionally, you all probably are thinking, oh my God, I'm going to be gone tomorrow. And I said, no, none of you are going to be gone tomorrow. None of you are going to be gone tomorrow. We don't even have a customer signed up for the new product yet that's on the existing product, but this is the plan. And I'm going to see you through this plan and we will get through this together. And we did.
So when you called a meeting or had your first call in which you had to actually do this, how did you get the courage to make the call or start the meeting, or where did the guts bring you to be able to actually go ahead and do this?
I will tell you, I did not sleep much the night before. The meeting was scheduled early West Coast time, like 9 a.m. West Coast time, which was 11 a.m. Dallas time. So I was halfway through the day, but I had not slept much because I was very worried about what was going to happen. And I had HR ready in case people were going to, I'm going to use the word flip out, but not really flip out, but just emotionally. But I didn't have any of that. I didn't have any of that. I had a lot of questions to field
Okay,
about.
what about you flipping out? I mean, this is really tough for you. You didn't sleep.
I
Did
didn't
you,
sleep.
what was the mechanism that brought you to say, okay, I'm going to get out, I'm going to stand up, I'm going to deliver the message that I hope will work. What did you do to give yourself the courage to do that?
I truly believed that the transparency and integrity in the way I operate, I prayed was sufficient enough to get me through it. And I think it, and I truly believe that's what it was. If they didn't know that I operated with complete integrity and always disclosed things and was very transparent on everything I knew. I mean, if you're a publicly traded company, as we were, if we were going to buy a company, I couldn't tell employees that. That impacts the stock price, right? Everybody gets in trouble. But I always tell my teams, you will know everything that I know that I am physically capable of telling you. If there are things that the company is doing, like buying a company or selling a piece of our business off, I obviously can't disclose that. But outside of that, you will know everything that I know. And they had worked with me for 2.5 years at the point that this started. So they knew the way I operated. If I was a brand new leader walking in on day one and telling them their job's going away, I guarantee you that team would have flown out the door. But I think the situation was different because they trusted me. And I built an incredible level of trust with them to be able to get through this and for them to believe when that conversation was. I'm sure that when we got off the phone, several of them got together and went, "Oh my God, what the hell does this mean?" And they probably talked through it amongst themselves. And I'm sure there were people on the team that said, "Guys, Jim's telling us we could have a minimum of 8 months' notice. Who tells you that?" And I think I think that got them through that process. As much as I anguished over what was I going to say, I really think the level of trust that I built with the population that I was supporting, I think helped immensely. If you build with integrity, if you have the trust of your employees and they feel psychologically safe, they'll follow you into battle, right? Just like the generals in the military, where people will follow you into battle. But if you do something to lose that trust, you'll never regain it back. And that's why integrity and leadership is so damn important.
You know, I you're making a really wonderful point, and I if I can put it in the context of where your courage came from, your courage came from belief that you had a trusting relationship with your team, and they would believe that you're doing the best you can for them, and gave you the courage to be the leader and to take them forward in the direction that was beneficial to the company and also beneficial to them.
To them.
So, Jim, I this has been a great conversation. Thank you for sharing your experiences. I think you've made an invaluable contribution to our understanding of the challenges leaders face every day. So, how can our audience, the people listening, how can they learn more about you and what you're doing at this point?
So they clearly can go to my website and see everything that I'm doing. And it's very simple. I'm sure it's probably on the screen. It'll be in the show notes, but it's just simply www.jimcarlo, all condensed, no spaces or anything, .com. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook. I post on LinkedIn a lot about leadership. And so follow me on LinkedIn. Because my passion is to change the identity of leaders and have them leading with integrity so that they can build the teams that, like, I have led in my career. And I have a workshop developed for corporations. So if a CEO or HR director is listening and your attrition rate is above 10%, I can fix that. And I'm literally can fix that. And it's a big culture shift, but leading with integrity, I think we need more of that in our companies today, in our government today, and in the countries around us and around the world. I think we all have gotten away from integrity and transparency. And I'm on a mission to bring it back.
A great mission and a great message. So I want to thank our audience for taking the time to engage with our guest and learn from our guest. If you have a compelling story to share about making a difficult decision, please contact me. And the way you can do that is go to rickwilliamsleadership.com and go to the Create the Future podcast section on my website. Again, that's rickwilliamsleadership.com. So remember that you create the future by the decisions you make today. Take time to get your important decisions right and also have some fun. Until next time, be well. What an interesting and inspiring conversation. I hope you found it as valuable as I did. Thank you for listening. Let me know if you have a compelling story to tell about making tough choices for your organization or for yourself. Coming on my podcast is a way to share what you have learned with a wider audience. If someone you know would be a great guest, please make an introduction. I welcome leaders with a story to tell and important learning to share. You can contact me about the podcast at podcast.rickwilliamsleadership.com. That's podcast.rickwilliamsleadership.com. Please share the link to my podcast with your colleagues. They will thank you for getting them access to these valuable conversations. And finally, please give us a great rating on and subscribe to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon Music. Just search for Create the Future with Rick Williams. Thank you for listening to Create the Future with Rick Williams podcast, conversations with leaders who make difficult decisions and build lasting legacies.